Hi, my name's Paul Grogan, and welcome to episode 53 of the All New Gaming Rules podcast. This episode is an audio version of the live Q&A that went out in September 2023. This podcast is only possible thanks to the support of my Patreon campaign. So huge thank you to all of my Patreon supporters for making this possible. And if you want to support the channel directly, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingrules. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the live Q&A for September 2023. As always, I'm going to spend the first half of this Q&A answering the questions that I've been asked in advance on the Guild, and then we're going to switch over to the live questions. So if you have any questions and you are watching this live, then please put them in the chat. Start with the word question, and then Vicky will transfer them into the document, which I will see on screen. But we're not going to get to them for about another 30 or 40 minutes or so. Right, so let's have a look at the questions that I've been asked in advance. These were posted to my guild on Board Game Geek. If you are not a member of the Gaming Rules Guild on Board Game Geek, then head on over to Board Game Geek and join up and subscribe. Vicky will put a link in the chat now. And you can join in with some of the conversations that are on there. So the first question is from Adrian. And he says that he recently combined the Century games and it worked better than expected. So I've not played any of the Century games, but I believe there's three of them and they are standalone games. But am I right in thinking that you can combine two or even three of them together to play a bigger game? I don't know. Anyway, Adrian says he's combined them and it worked better than expected. If you had to create a mashup game where two unrelated games had to be combined together, which would they be? The themes would have to be combined and the designers would work together to combine the mechanisms. So this is at the point where I realise that I should have spent a bit more time this afternoon reading through these questions. I've been filming videos this afternoon, so I haven't had any chance to look through these in advance. This might actually be a good question for the Guild. This is not me just trying to get out of answering the question. This is the kind of question which I think would be useful or interesting for other people to answer. So I think let's put this question on the Guild. So what Chris is going to do, Chris is going to copy this question and it's going to be posted to the Guild. So this will be a question on the Guild that everybody else can contribute to. And it is, if you had to create a mashup game where two unrelated games had to be combined together, what would they be? And if I haven't answered this myself in a week, Adrian, feel free to ping me and chase me and I will have a think about it. But in the meantime, keep an eye on the Guild, because in a few minutes time, hopefully that question is going to appear. And then if you've got your own answers, let me know. I'm sure I've got a good answer for it somewhere. Right, next question from Brian. First of all, did we try while we were away? While we were away, Mauritian Napolitain biscuits. No. The only biscuits that I had while I was away is occasionally at the restaurant they would have these small cookies. That's about it, really. I don't think... No, we didn't have them. If so, what did we think? I didn't even know they were a thing. Have we tried the new raspberry Jaffa cakes? Nope. Is he okay? you can't see this, but Loki is draped all over Vicky's shoulders and he's purring away and gripping on tightly with his claws. He's very, I would say he's very happy, but actually he's more hungry than happy. I think he's happy. He's happy. I haven't tried the new raspberry Jaffa cakes. Given the internet superiority of raspberry flavour over orange, can you see raspberry Jaffa cakes becoming my go-to version of the cake? Particularly if raspberry Joe nuts become available. I say this more in hope than expectation. Would I prefer a raspberry Jaffa cake to an orange one? I probably would. I think I preferred the cherry ones because I do like cherry. But yeah, I think I probably would. But I've not seen raspberry Jaffa cakes yet. Next question from Brian. Given your newfound love of dice, will I be trying Terraforming Mars, the dice game? Yeah, I need to send Stronghold Games a message about that to see if they are happy to pass me a copy, because I do like dice in some games, not all games. There are definitely some games where the dice bother me a bit too much, but I do like Terraforming Mars. So yeah, we will see. We will see if the dice game, if you've played Terraforming Mars, the dice game, let me know in the chat if you're watching this live, or in the comments if you're watching this back afterwards. I don't know. Is it out? I think so. I think that's the one that's out. I've not had a chance to try it yet, and I don't think I know anybody who has it. Finally, what are your favourite games that include dice as a main gameplay component? Ooh, lots. I mean, a lot of Steffenfeld games use dice as a main gameplay component. Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of Steffenfeld games use dice as a very important part of the game. But anything with dice placement or dice drafting or anything like that, I really like. The chat is doing that thing where it's queuing the messages up and then they all come through at once. It started doing that a number of months ago. It's a shame that they haven't fixed it. There's nothing I can do about it, unfortunately. So, yeah, lots and lots of games that use dice as a main gameplay component, but we'll say the Steffenfeld ones are initially. Yeah. Paul Snuggs is asking, what's the best and worst thing about coming home from honeymoon? Well, the best thing is probably the cats, because we missed the cats a lot, even though we did end up seeing a small family of cats at the second hotel who lived. They were strays, but they sort of lived in the hotel, and there were two really small, cute kittens. I'll try and get some photos and put them on Slack later on for people. So yeah, probably the best thing about coming back was having the cats again. The worst thing about coming home for me was the mess. Because unfortunately, due to a combination of a whole load of things that happened just before we went away, I ended up running out of time, and a lot of the house jobs, tidying and things like that, just didn't get done. So we left the place in a bit of a mess, and we returned to the mess. Unfortunately, nobody sneaked around and tidied up while we were away. Paul is also asking, if you had to have a RNG in a board game, random number generator, which means do you prefer? Dice, cards, app, etc. Ultimately, I always prefer cards. And the reason why I generally prefer cards to dice is that over the period of the deck of cards, it should average out. Whereas if I roll 10 dice, I might roll 10 ones. Whereas if I draw 10 cards from a deck, I won't get 10 ones because there isn't 10 ones in there. So cards for me is the better way of generating something randomly, because it's less of a problem. An app, it depends on the app. I mean, there are some apps which purely just generate random stuff and it's very random. And there are some apps that can be very clever, and they can potentially adjust the RNG depending on, you know, if you're doing bad, it might give you a little bit of a bonus, or if you're doing really good, it might give you a bit of a penalty. I'm not sure. I don't know how a lot of these apps work. Next question from Chris Dearlove. There are some mechanisms found only in one or very few games. Sometimes it wouldn't fit most of the games, for example, the doubling die in backgammon. But sometimes you might think a mechanism should be more widely used, especially if it is better than the game that uses it. Do I have any examples to suggest? Well, we don't often have two questions in a short space of time that I think would be good questions for the guild. And this is another one that I think would be a good question for the guild. So if Chris is watching, I don't think Chris is watching. So Chrissy, if you're able to convert this into another question for the guild. So this is from Chris Dearlove, and he's basically saying, there are some mechanisms that you only find in one or very few games. Do I have any examples of ones that could be more widely used? So one of the ones which I think was a really good mechanism was the way that workers move around the board. And it was used in Royal Palace, which is a game from quite a long time ago, 10-15 years ago. And it's more recently been reused in one of the designer's other games, Carnegie. Carnegie used a similar mechanism, but in Carnegie, it's moving your workers around on your own board, whereas in Royal Palace, it was a central board. And the way that the workers entered that board and moved around, I thought was a very, very clever mechanism in that game. And it was kind of also used in Carnegie as well. The other one, which I've been a big proponent of for... how long have we lived in this house? 16 years? So about 17 years. Basically Shipyard. I think it was maybe 2006. I think Shipyard was 2006. And Shipyard is getting a new version. It's getting reprinted this year. But Shipyard used a mechanism which I thought was massively clever. And I've been banging on about this for the last 16, 17 years, that more games should use this. And recently, we have had a number of games that use it. So basically, in Shipyard, you would start the game with three green contracts and three blue contracts. And then at a certain point in the game, you would have to give up one of them. And then another third of the way into the game, you would have to give up another one. So you ended the game with one blue contract and one green contract. And they were basically end game scoring cards. And the reason why I think that is a brilliant mechanism for the game is because it basically gives you at the start of the game, right, here's three blue contracts. One of these is going to be your end game one. And here's three green ones. One of these is going to be your end game one. But you don't have to decide now. Just see how the game goes. And then when we're halfway through the game or whatever, then you need to make a decision about which one is going to be your objective. I think it was genius. And I hadn't seen it before. And then I never saw it again for years. And then we started seeing it. Ark Nova has a similar mechanism. You start the game in Ark Nova with two of these end game objectives. And at a certain point in the game, everybody has to discard one of them. I think it's genius. And it really frustrates me in games where at the start of the game, here's two end game scoring cards. Pick which one to use right now before the game's even started. It drives me insane. For me, that's a complete flaw, right? Having to make a decision at the start of a game of which of these two endgame scoring cards I want before the game's even started. Anyway, yeah. So any game like that, I house rule to say you don't have to make the decision at the start of the game. In fact, sometimes I say you don't even have to make the decision until the end of the game. Just keep both of them. And then at the end of the game, score whichever one you want. That doesn't break the game whatsoever. Anyway, there's my thinking of it. But yes, the question, that's my examples. But the question that Chris has posed, which is going to be asked on the Guild, is... What was the question? Oh yeah, pick a mechanism that you've only found in one or very few games that you think could be more widely used. Good question, Chris. Next question from Jolo. This has been a question that he's been wanted to ask, but keeps missing the Q&A and the timings. Which of the top 100 games on Board Game Geek have I not played? And he says that I imagine you've got to be close to having played all 100. Now, if I'd had time to prepare this afternoon, I would have gone through the list. I haven't. So let me quickly go through top 100 games on Board Game Geek. And if you already know the answer to this, just put in the chat, or if you're watching this back afterwards, leave me a comment and let me know how many of the top 100 games you have played. And I'm just going to go through very quickly now. So I haven't actually played Brass Birmingham. Brass Birmingham is the number one game on Board Game Geek. I don't agree with that, but I've not played it. So, Pandemic Legacy Season 1, yes. Gloomhaven, yes. Ark Nova, yes. Twilight Imperium 4th Edition. I've not played 4th Edition of Twilight Imperium. So, let's count the ones I haven't played. 1, 2. Terraforming Mars, Dune Imperium, Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion, War of the Rings 2nd Edition, Star Wars Rebellion, Spirit Island, Gaia Project, Through the Ages, Twilight Struggle, Great Western Trail, Scythe, Castles of Burgundy, Seven Wonders, Jewel, Nemesis I've not played, Eclipse, Brass Lancashire, Concordia, Feast for Odin, Clank Legacy I've not played, Wingspan I have now finally played, Terramystica, Arkham Horror, Lutherans of Arnhem, Root I've not played, Everdell I've not played, so we're up to 6. Done that, Viticulture, yeah. Pax Premier 2nd Edition, this is 7. Blood Rage, I've not played. 8. Cascadia, 9. Pandemic Legacy Season 0. Pandemic Legacy Season 2. So that's 11. Sleeping Gods. Quacks of Quedlinburg, I've still not played. So what are we at? 13. Paladin Star Wars Imperial Assault. Mechs vs. Minions, 14. Kingdom Death Monster, 15. Cthulhu Death May Die, 16. Why is Agricola in there twice? Anyway, 16. Eclipse, both Eclipse versions are in there. 16. There's another Clank in there, so 17. Beyond the Sun, 18. Obsession, 19. Search for Planet X, didn't realise that was that high, 20. Decrypto, 21. Inish, 22. And I don't think I've played Raiders of the North Sea. So 23 of the top 100 games I've not played. But yeah, let me know in the chat, what's your number? Or leave me a comment afterwards. How many of the top 100 have you played? So I've played 73. Yeah, that's not bad. 73. Next question from Jenny. Jenny has a rescue cat called Brooklyn, who is shy, gentle and docile. And do we think that she will be a better girlfriend for Thor or Loki? That's a cat. So what do people think? Better girl? Yeah. Now, I love our cats, but she's very, very cute. What do we think? Thor? Because just, yeah. Okay, we're gonna say Thor, because Loki's a bit manic and a bit weird and a bit crazy. We love you, Loki. Where's he gone? Anyway, yeah, so that's Jenny's rescue cat. Next question from Angus. I'm sure you'll have a lot to share with us regarding your honeymoon, but which would we prefer for our wedding gift, honey or moon? You see, every time I get a question like that, my brain thinks of the realism of the situation, and you can't give me the moon, but you could give me a pot of honey. So I'm going to have to say honey, because that's realistic. We did taste some very nice different honeys while we were away, and we brought back some coconut honey, pineapple honey. So we bought some very expensive pineapple honey, and we brought that back with us. So yeah, I do like honey. It is nice, but yeah. Next question from Radek. My question is related to the game Golem, which he recently took off his shelf for shame. Watched the solo gameplay where I had some doubts about the rules. And I also mentioned that I would contact the publisher or the author to clarify these doubts, i.e. the negative values on the Automa's income track, which was about a year and a half ago. I do remember. I do remember it. And I remember inquiring about it, but the responses I got were not satisfactory for me. People tried to explain it, but it still didn't actually make any sense. And to this day, it still makes absolutely no sense. And nobody has been able to explain why there are negative spaces on the track. So from memory, and this is going back a year and a half, you have this track and you track, I think, how many resources or how much income the Automa has on this track. But it can go negative. But the fact that it goes negative doesn't mean anything. The negative numbers don't mean anything. And the rules are very unclear and very vague. And it's like, well, it can spend stuff even if it doesn't have it. And anyway, it's very unclear. And so, yeah, I did post about it on Board Game Geek. I got a couple of answers. It didn't make any sense. There may be an FAQ for playing Golem solo. Yeah, the rules for the Golem solo version were not that clear. Golem is one of those games that I played 4 or 5 times and now have moved it on. It was okay, but it wasn't good enough to stay in my collection. Next question from Nigel. Now, Nigel does post long questions normally, so I will try to summarise But this is about a hot topic at the moment, and I am really curious to see what other people think about this, because I don't have my own strong opinions on it. If you are looking for me to go on a rant about this, then I'm not going to. This is about the recent Kickstarter campaign for the new Terraforming Mars content. Terraforming Mars, one of my favourite games. It raised over $1 million. It's got thousands of backers, whatever, right? But Stronghold Games have revealed that they have and continue to use AI-generated content, specifically AI-generated art, in the development and delivery of this project. And there is an article published in Polygon magazine, or online news article thing, with Travis from Stronghold Games, who was interviewed by Polygon, and he defended this decision. But basically, there is ethical and legal implications of using AI-generated art, which has been discussed a number of times before. And if you're interested, a couple of months ago, I took part in Bored and Dice's like games weekend, where I was on with a few other people, and I was supposed to be hosting it. And the discussion was about AI in games, and AI art was one of the things that was discussed. But there's a lot of people who have boycotted this project. There's a lot of people really not happy about this. I know Liz Davidson from Beyond Solitaire has recorded a video about it, if you're interested in that. And somebody on BGG has apparently said this hobby has become an industry and gone from a warm, fuzzy house that you visit to feel good to a cold, indifferent factory that only exists to make money. I think that's a step too far, to be honest. The hobby is still a warm and fuzzy industry, most of it, not all of it. And certainly in the content creation world, there are elements of that which are definitely not warm and fuzzy. And there are certain publishers who are very, very warm and fuzzy, and there are other publishers who are not. But I don't think the industry has completely and utterly gone in on itself. So Nigel is saying, do I feel that the hobby has become too big and too impersonal? We're in danger of losing the human touch. Some yes, some no. There are some publishers that I speak to who it is very much a business. It's all a business, you know. I'm not blaming anybody for wanting to make a living out of it, but there are some publishers who run things a bit too cold and clinically, and you can't have conversations with them. And there are other publishers who are still very much, I get a really good warm and fuzzy feeling from them. So it really does depend on the publisher. As for the ethical and legal implications of using AI generated art, to be honest, it surprises me. When I heard that Stronghold Games were going to be using AI-generated art on some of their cards that they are going to sell and print, I don't know that much about this, but I do, from what I do know, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, if I was to use some AI program on the internet to say, give me a picture of a spacecraft in orbit of Mars, it might go away and it might find a piece of art that somebody, an artist somewhere, has created. And it will take that piece of art and it will change it and produce a new piece of art. And therefore, what I've got is I've got my piece of art that was generated by AI, but it's actually based on somebody else's. I don't understand the legal implications of Stronghold Games using that on a finished product, and therefore the original artist who goes, wait a minute, that looks a bit like my piece of work. Can they? I don't understand it. So, I mean, I assume that it's all okay. I assume that there is no legal implications. Otherwise, would Stronghold Games be doing this if there was a legal implication? I don't know. Anyway, moving on. Graham Charlton wants to know, what is my 11th favourite game from 2022? Now, this is a bit of a leading question, because today I have actually filmed my top 10 games of 2022. So I'm not going to answer that question, Graham, because You will get an answer to that. Well, in fact, no, I'll message you privately and I will tell you, but I don't want to say it in public because that will spoil what games are in my top 10. My top 10 games of 2022 video will be coming out this weekend. It should be coming out this weekend. It's been written, it's been filmed. I haven't edited yet, but I will get that. I'm scheduling it for Sunday. Patreon supporters will get it earlier, but the public release of the video will be on Sunday. But yes, Graham, I will message you my 11th favourite game of 2022. Right, final question from the questions that I got asked in advance, which is really good. We normally have more. And this is a non-gaming question from Nick, who went to Blackpool in the summer. Now, I grew up in Blackpool. I spent the first 27 years of my life in the Blackpool area. And he's saying, what was my favourite ride at Blackpool Pleasure Beach? So I used to go, it's basically, what are they called? Are they called theme parks? I think they're called theme parks, aren't they? But I don't know why they're called theme parks. But anyway, but the difference with Blackpool Pleasure Beach compared to a lot of other ones is that it's free to go in. You have to buy tickets to go on the rides, but you can walk in there and you can walk around and everything else. I'm not a big roller coaster fan, so I remember going to Blackpool Pleasure Beach a few times, but I don't remember going that many times. And I don't remember going enough to remember what my favourite ride was, but I think probably the log flume, which for memory, all it does is go click, 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 and then the log goes down and splashes into water, and that's it. But I do remember that. Right. Okay. That is the end of all of the questions that I've been asked in advance on the Board Game Geek Guild. So we're going to take a slight pause and I'm going to tell you about the contest. So every month, as part of these live Q&As, I do a £50 giveaway contest. £25 of that money comes from me and £25 of it comes from Gameslore. Gameslore is the largest specialist games retailer in the UK. You can buy lots of games for them for delivery online at gameslore.com. And they give me £25 every month to give away to you. And I add £25 of my own money of vouchers. Yes, I'm not sending you cash. I'll send you gold bullion in the post. It's £50 worth of vouchers that you can spend at Gameslore. And the winner last month was... I don't actually know how to pronounce Aid's second name, so I could just say Aid and get away with it, but I'll have a go. Poichi? I'm going to say Poichi. Let me know if that's right. And last month, rather than giving you a secret word, I asked you to each come up with your own words that was something funny. And Aid's words were purple monkey dishwasher, which sounds like a What Three Words address to me. Put purple monkey dishwasher. Could you put purple monkey dishwasher into What Three Words? And see if it comes up with something. Because that would be great. Anyway, Aid has won £50 worth of vouchers from Gameslore, which he is going to spend and get him some games. If you want to enter the contest this month, all you need to do is click on the link, which is going to be put in the chat. It's also in the description of this video. I think I remembered to add it. But all you need to do is you need to click on that link. It takes you to a Google form. Put in your name, put in your email address. And the secret word for this month is coconut. So we're not having choose your own word this month. It is a specific secret word. And the secret word is coconut. I will do the draw 1 month from now. So if you're watching this video or if you're listening to this as a podcast and you're listening to it next week or the week after or even halfway through October, well, maybe not halfway through October, you can still enter the contest. So, normally these videos get about 1,000 views and I only have 100 people entering the contest. So only 10% of people enter this contest. It is available to everybody. If you are one of my Patreon supporters, you get 2 entries into the hat instead of 1. Right. So good luck. Good luck. Okay, so we do have Purple Monkey Dishwasher is on What Three Words? Where is it? It's in the mountains. I'm zooming out. It's near Colorado Springs. There you go. So Purple Monkey Dishwasher Is there anything near it? No, it's literally in the middle of the wilderness near Colorado. But there you go. Apparently the link doesn't seem to work. Well, it's interesting. The link doesn't work for Peter, but Loopy has already entered it. So it does work, Peter. Turn it off and on again. That might work. Right. Okay, let's... oh, it's from The Simpsons. Oh, right. Okay. So is that where The Simpsons is set? Maybe it is. Okay, right. So moving on to the live questions that we've been asked in advance. So two questions from Davis. With all the attention that AI has received with regards to the various avenues of creativity, are you swayed in any way as to whether or not you will cover a game? Okay, so this is following on from the previous conversation about AI. Right, well, here's the thing. There are some people who've got very angry about this, and they've said that I am never going to cover a game which has got AI generated art. And that's fine. If they want to do that, then that's their choice. That's their decision. And, you know, everybody has their own choice. Everybody has their own decisions to make. Some people have gone one step further and said, we are going to boycott any games from any publisher that uses AI art. So does that mean if you own Terraforming Mars and you like Terraforming Mars as a game, you're now going to get rid of it because the company uses AI generated art? I mean, I'm not saying that's wrong. You know, I have my own morals and my principles of certain things in life, and I stick to them. Sometimes a detrimental effect to myself. For this one, I don't think I know enough about it. And ultimately, I don't think it's going to stop me playing a game that has AI generated art. Apologies if that is the wrong answer. As for whether or not I will cover a game, right, here's the thing. There are certain publishers who have done things in the past which, in my opinion, are worse than using AI-generated art. I'm not going to list them, and I'm not going to tell you things. Some of this is out there, some of this is known, and some of this is behind-the-scenes stuff that not everybody knows. But let me tell you, there are some publishers out there, including some big publishers, who have done, in my opinion, far worse things than use AI-generated art. And yet, there are other content creators who are still more than happy to cover their games. Some of them get paid to do it, some of them don't get paid to do it. Everybody has their own line on whether they're going to cover it or whether they're not going to cover it. I have my own line, and there are certain publishers who I will not cover their games because of the way that they have treated me or the way that they've treated other people or the things that I know about them. And I'll give you an example, and I'm not going to name any names, but every year we run GridCon, which is our own convention that me and Vicky run together. And every year we run a charity raffle where I ask publishers to donate games to me, and we run a raffle and we give those games away. And that's what happens. It's a charity raffle. Publishers donate games. We raise money for charity. We raise a lot of money for charity. Last year we raised £4,505 for charity, and lots of publishers were very, very generous. One publisher, who is a very big publisher, who everybody will have heard of, turned round to me and said, we will only give you one game for the charity raffle as long as you do a playthrough video for that game to help promote the game. At no cost. Now, the time it takes me to do a playthrough video is probably at least 8 hours, because I have to get the game, I have to learn the game, I have to set the studio up, I have to invite people around, all of that stuff, do the thumbnails, do everything else. So they wanted me to spend 8 hours of my time for no benefit whatsoever, for no payment, to cover one of their games and only then will they give me one game for the charity raffle. That is disgusting behaviour from a publisher, and I will not cover any games from that publisher ever again. So again, we all have our own lines that we cross. Am I swayed in any way as to whether or not you will cover a game? Let me tell you this. Let's just go back to the Terraforming Mars, which is on Kickstarter right now, has raised $1 million and has got 10,000 backers. There are some people boycotting that campaign, but clearly not everybody. Let me tell you, are there going to be content creators who create videos on that game? Yes, there will be. Will there be some content creators who are paid to create videos for that game? Yes, there will be. Will I be one of those? I don't know. I haven't spoken to Stronghold Games recently. I need to go back to them. I need to speak to them about something. So, and because Terraforming Mars is one of my favourite games, of course I'm going to ask. But anyway, there we go. Next question from Dave Davis. Do I think the hubbub is something that will relax soon or have a significant impact on game publication? Oh, this is the same thing. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things. And this is the whole thing. I'm no longer on Twitter, but when I used to be on Twitter, every week there was another disaster. There was another calamity. There was another big hot topic for everybody to get angry about. And then a month later, everybody's forgotten about it. And I'm like, hang on a minute. A publisher has literally just said they've drowned 20 kittens in a pond and everybody's angry about it and everybody's burning their games. And then a month later, they come out with a new game and everybody's going, oh, look, new game. And it's like, I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm glad that I've managed to distance myself a bit from all of this hubbub, because I don't have the time or the patience or anything to get into these things anymore. I'm too busy. I've got other important things in life to do. Next question from Adrian. On behalf of Mr. Turtsy from Slack, what is my favourite tech in Voidfall? So yes, there is a question. David Turtsy, the co-designer of Voidfall, wants to know, what is my favourite tech? I don't know what my favourite tech is. I haven't played the game enough. I don't know all of them, and I don't know all of them that well. I do like the Trade Nexus, because I got it in the first ever game I played. And I used it a lot, and I thought that was quite cool. But I also like the idea of the decontamination chambers. Then again, my super destroyers were amazing. So, yeah, I don't know whether I have a favourite tech yet. I need to play it more. Normal question. Normal answer. Twilight Scuttle says, if I designed a game called Through the Mages, The Spirit of Clover Island, will I try it? Absolutely. That sounds fantastic. Through the Mages, The Spirit of Clover Island. So presumably that's Through the Ages, Mage Knight, Spirit Island, and So Clover, all together. Yeah, there you go. Mash those four games together. What could possibly go wrong? The Plebiscite says, are you at Essen this year? How might we run into you? Okay, so Essen this year. Yes, I am going to Essen. This will be my 24th year, I think. So the first thing is, I am going to be doing demos of Nucleum for Board and Dice every morning from 10 o'clock until 2 o'clock. However, those demos are pretty much fully booked already. One of the perks of being a Patreon supporter of mine is that I am basically taking bookings for these demos, and I am allowing my Patreon supporters first dibs on getting a demo from me. And most of the demos are already fully booked. So if you do want a demo of Nucleum, Board and Dice have three tables and they are going to be running demos of it. I will be there, but as I say, most of the demo slots that I've got are booked up. If they're not booked up, then there might be a slot. Just come and see me, let me know. I'll be more than happy. So that's where I'm going to be. I've also got a Patreon meetup. So if you're a Patreon supporter of mine, there will be a meetup on the Thursday night. I'm also, and I haven't organised this yet, so keep an eye on my guild, on Board Game Geek, because I will post the details there. But last year I did a meet and greet event and I've been invited to it this year and I need to pick what date and time to choose for that event. And I haven't decided yet whether I'm going to do it. And if I am going to do it, and I probably will do it, I just need to pick a date and time. And when I have picked that, I will post about it on my Board Game Geek Guild. And that's basically a room where lots of content creators can arrange to meet up with their fans. Because the problem is, if you come and see me when I'm doing demos of Nucleum, I'm going to be busy. I am going to be demoing. So I'm not really going to have much time to chat. Whereas this meet and greet event is a good place to do that. Next question from Elaine. Have you found a good place to buy dates yet, now that you have acquired a taste for them? We haven't actually looked. No, we haven't looked yet. But one of the things that I really enjoyed being away was having dates every morning, except when they weren't there. Sometimes they were there and other times they weren't there. But yeah, I would eat like 4 or 5 dates each morning and take a couple with me. Love them. Absolutely love them. So yeah, dates. Figs as well, but not as much as dates. But yeah, you said that we've got some chopped ones downstairs because you can buy chopped dates from the supermarket, which are generally used in recipes. But I don't know where you can buy fresh dates from. In fact, we went shopping the other day and I completely forgot to look. So if anybody knows where you can buy good dates from in the UK, let me know. Next question from the Games Kingdom. Which one game do you wish you'd had an involvement in? And what rule would you change in that game? Oh, you see, when I look at my favourite games and some of the top games that are out there, we're looking at Gloomhaven, Through the Ages, Mage Knight, all of those games I was involved in. There is at least one rule in each of those games which I helped contribute to in some way. So is there a game that I wish I'd had an involvement in? I mean, there are certain games that it depends what your reason for asking the question is. So Spirit Island is a fantastic game, right? It would have been great if I was involved in Spirit Island, but I wouldn't change anything. I think Spirit Island is an absolutely fantastic game. It is an amazing game, brilliant game. And it's not like I wish I'd been involved in it in order for me to change something. It just would have been nice to have been involved in that because it is so good. I'm trying to think of other games that I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. Every time I play games, I'm thinking this would be slightly better if it was this rule. Oh, I can't think. I'm trying to think because I'm not sure. That's not a good question for the guild. So how am I going to remember later on? I'll come back to that later on. Justin is asking, have I got used to wearing my wedding ring yet? Yes, I have. So oddly enough, interesting story. I don't wear a ring. Well, no, I do now. But I have never really worn a ring in my entire life. Don't know, maybe 20 years ago, I bought a couple of cheap silver rings. I experimented for a bit and I bought a couple of cheap silver rings. And I think I wore them for, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks or whatever, or maybe even a year. I don't remember. It was so long ago. But I still had these rings. They were still in the house. I never wore them, but they were still in the house. So when I went to UK Games Expo earlier this year, I took one of those rings with me and I wore it on my wedding finger for the 3 days of UK Games Expo. And the reason I did that was to get used to wearing a ring because I was going to have to be wearing a ring every day from then on. And the really strange thing is, considering I'd never worn a ring most of my life, I wore a ring for 3 days. I then lost that ring on the last day. It has since been found. But straight away on the Monday morning, I felt weird. I felt like there was something missing. So I got used to wearing a ring so quickly that when I wasn't wearing a ring, it felt strange. So yeah, I've absolutely got used to wearing it. And when I'm not wearing it, it feels weird. It feels like there's something missing. So, yeah. Next question from Kabuki Kid. Have I read anything for pleasure recently? Okay, so Kabuki Kid, I have not finished the last book that I was reading. I don't read books. It's one of the things, for a number of different reasons, which I won't go into here, but I don't read books. So I was reading the Assassins trilogy from the Farseer trilogy from Robin Hobb. And I was on the third book and I got halfway through and then I didn't finish it. This was over 10 years ago and I haven't read a book since. So reading is not something that I do. There's a couple of reasons why. As I say, I don't want to go into the full details why. But I do read graphic novels and comic books, mainly on the iPad. And I do read other books, just not storybooks or anything like that. Audiobooks are the things that I listen to. So whenever I'm going for a walk or doing a bit of gardening or at the gym, audiobooks is the thing that I listen to. And I am currently listening to the very last book of the Dresden Files. I say the last book that has been released from the Dresden Files. It's called Battleground, that's it. And yeah, it's the last one. It's the latest one to have come out. The series isn't finished yet. I think that's like book 18 or something like that. So yeah, I can read rule books, just not other books. Next question from Jeffrey. When will the top 20 games of 2022 go up? I mentioned that earlier on, that it's not the top 20, it's the top 10. And it will be available to Patreon supporters probably later this week. And I will be releasing it on Sunday to the public. So that's my top 10 games of 2022. Keep an eye on the channel. That will be going up soon. Next question from Twilight Scuttle. If a fan wanted to send you some swag or a gift, where would we send it? Well, first of all, send me an email. The best thing to do is send me an email first or something like that. The reason for that is I'm not great at receiving gifts. I feel quite uncomfortable whenever I receive any gifts, to the point where I generally ask people not to send gifts. Now, some people do break that rule sometimes, and I do get some gifts. And some of the gifts that we've received for the wedding have been amazing. But in general, I actually feel a little uncomfortable when somebody gets me a gift. Now, if it's an edible gift, different story. One of the reasons is we're really trying hard to declutter the house. I have too much stuff. The house is a mess. Everywhere you look, there's stuff everywhere. And I have boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff with no home for it. So one thing that I'm not keen on is receiving physical gifts. That means I have now something that I have to keep. Again, there are certain exceptions to that. In general, we try not to receive gifts if we can. But yeah, if there's something you can think of, if it's edible, definitely up for that. Next question from Monica. Could you name three new games that get the official Paul Grogan stamp of approval on the solo mode? Poof. Offhand, new games. Great Western Trail New Zealand, without even playing it, because I know that the solo mode for that game is based on the solo mode that's in Great Western Trail. And that's for me, that gets my stamp of approval because it's relatively low maintenance. For those people watching who don't know, I like my solo modes relatively low maintenance. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I like 1 to 3, maybe 4. But anything beyond that, and I actually don't enjoy them because the amount of mental energy that I have to put into running the solo mode is too much for me. There's one exception to this, and that's Voidfall, which is a new game that's come out. The solo mode for Voidfall isn't an AI opponent. Therefore, for me, the solo mode of Voidfall is good. It is playable, and I do enjoy it. Even though it's complex, I'm not having to run an AI, and I'm not having to go through a massive flowchart decision tree of what it would do. Voidfall's got a good solo mode. Lost Ruins of Arnak has got a good solo mode. That's that's probably around the upper limit of my complexity. Great Western Trail, New Zealand. I've not tried the solo mode for the warp yet, so I can't comment on that. Black Alert doesn't have a solo mode. Yeah, I'm trying to think. If you know of any games that I've played recently that have good solo modes, let me know. Let me know. Next question from Monica. If I could choose one season and play games from that season, what season would it be and what kind of games would it be? We had a similar question last month, didn't we? About seasons. Can't remember what the question was last month, but there was definitely a question about seasons. And I'm not sure what you mean by if I could choose a season and play games from that season. Do you mean games that are themed around that season? If you mean games that are themed around that season, then what season would it be? So, probably for me, spring, because spring is things growing. And I like things that grow. So, yeah, I would probably choose, got a question, like winter, plain, Nouvelle France, a few acres of snow. So it's, oh, right, yeah. So if it was winter, it would be games with snow and things like that. I mean, I do like snow. I do like snow a lot. Oh, that is a good question now. I might have to switch my idea. I might have to switch it to winter. Because, yeah, games set in winter where everything's cold and covered in ice and things like that. Okay, we'll go with winter. We'll go with that. And what games would it be? Oh, gosh. Frostpunk, Frosthaven, anything with Frost in the title. ISS Frost Vanguard, Void Frost, Frost Reckoning. Yeah. We'll go with winter. I mean, I've got Legends of Andor Eternal Frost over there as well. But yeah, there's a lot of snowy games. Next question. Dark Mind says, any thoughts on Cool Stuff Inc. end of board game sales? I don't know anything about that. So let me just look that up on the internet. So Cool Stuff Inc. are stopping selling games, are they? Sell board games. So Cool Stuff Inc. is it's a place in America. Here we go. 2 days ago, Cool Stuff Inc. no longer selling board games. They are only going to focus on card games. Apparently they've been doing a liquidation sale recently. So yeah, I have no thoughts on it because it impacts me not at all. I'm not in America, so it has absolutely no impact on me whatsoever. Therefore, I don't have any thoughts on it. This is going back to what I was saying earlier on about things that don't affect me are not things that I really think about because, yeah, it doesn't affect me at all. So I don't know if you've got thoughts on it. I don't know what it means for the hobby. I don't know what it means for the industry. I mean, it's interesting in a way that I thought they were big and they sponsored lots of channels and I thought they did well. So I don't know why they've done it. So I guess I have a bit of an interest in why, but I don't know. Next question from James. Do I think the rise of games too big to fit on a standard Kallax shelf and game prices increasing to nearly £100 each is starting to impact and damage the board gaming hobby? Well, we've talked about this, James, a couple of times before, is that I am always still surprised at how the board game hobby is continuing to grow and get bigger. And in a time when the world is facing multiple disasters, both natural and caused by people, and a lot of people are struggling. We are currently in the middle of a cost of living crisis in the UK, and there are people who can't afford to turn the heating on and things like this. And I'm sure there are other countries in the world that are also struggling. And yet we are having games coming out. And as you say, the standard game now is 70 or 80 quid. And a lot of games, if it's decent production quality, is like 100 quid. And I don't know how people are affording all of these big box games for all of this money. I mean, you know, if you've got a good job, great, and you've got the spare cash and you can afford to buy that, then that's great. But I'm surprised that it hasn't had an impact on the hobby. I'm surprised we haven't seen more publishers go out of business, because it appears that they're having to increase costs because the cost of materials is going up, the cost of everything is going up, but people seem to be still able to afford that. And therefore, I don't know, maybe the hobby has grown so that if each individual person can now only afford half of the games each year than they were able to afford 5 years ago, but the hobby has grown to the point where there's now twice as many people buying games, maybe that's what's happened. I don't know. But most of the publishers seem to be still doing well. So, yeah, I don't know. Although Kabuki Kid in the chat says, yeah, a lot of companies are hurting. See Haber. Yeah, so maybe I'm not seeing... Maybe my view of it is different. Because Haber... I saw that recently, that Haber are filing for liquidation or something like that. I mean, Haber, they're huge. So yeah, maybe they are struggling, but whereas other publishers don't seem to be struggling. Who knows? Who knows? Stephen says he's going to Essen Spiel next month for the first time. Do I have any advice for a first-time visitor? I have lots of advice for a first-time visitor, Stephen. you are probably best, to be honest, asking that question on the Guild. So if you head on over to the Guild, Guild number 2258, I assume you're still watching, Stephen. Head on over to the Guild, Guild number 2258, join and subscribe if you're not already on there, and post and say exactly that. I will post some things on there, but there you will get replies from other people as well. I've been going for a long time. I've been going for 20 odd years, but I do have a lot of advice for people. And obviously for the last 7 or 8 years, I don't go to Essen anymore as a punter. I now go to Essen. I don't sit down and get demos of games. I don't have time. I'm working. I'm demoing games for other companies and things like that. So, yeah, I'm in a slightly different position now, but I still have lots of advice for you. So, yes, pop on there, ask that, and I'll be on there. And, yeah, if you're going, pop in, say hello. Next question from Peter. Which rulebook is the best you have read but not written? I do get asked this quite a lot. This is a common question. There are a lot of good rulebooks out there. The recent ones from memory, I personally found the rulebook for Great Western Trail generally very good, but a few people I've spoken to recently have said it was awful. The rulebook for, I'm trying to think, the games from Porter Games or Chill Fox Games or Chili Fox Games, so Revive from last year and Footprints, which is over there, which I'll be covering on the channel soon, those rulebooks were pretty good. From what I remember, I'm trying to think what else I've had recently. Hoplomachus and Hoplomachus Victorum were good rulebooks. Chip Theory Games have come a long way with their rulebooks since a few years ago. Yeah, they were good rulebooks, and they're ones that I wasn't involved with. Voidfall, I was not involved with whatsoever. I had no involvement with Voidfall, and for a complex game, the Voidfall rulebook is 99% there. I originally thought it was 100%, but actually a couple of queries have come out which are not 100% clear. But Voidfall was a pretty good rulebook for a heavy game. Twilight Scuttle also wants to know, how many Patreon supporters will Paul need to play Win, Lose or Banana on a live stream for an hour? Yeah, maybe 2,000. So if I get 2,000 Patreon supporters, I will play, which is never going to happen. But if it does, I will play Win, Lose, Banana for an hour. There you go. There's my promise to you. Hopefully everybody will have forgotten that by the time. Monica says, is there ever a time with all the rules in your brain that you start mixing up rules for games while teaching? Yes. Yeah, but I'm usually quite good at stopping myself and thinking, I don't actually remember what the rule is for this. For example, we were playing Aeon Trespass Odyssey last night and we had a line of sight question. Well, how many games have rules for line of sight? And I don't remember, because the rules for line of sight are different in Aeon Trespass Odyssey, Imperial Assault. What's that one that I covered? Apex Legends. Yeah, anyway, all of these games with different line of sight rules that I always think, what are the line of sight rules for this one? It's like, can you draw a line from one corner to any corner? What happens if it runs along an obstacle? You know, does that count? That kind of thing. So yeah, I do start mixing up or forgetting specific rules for certain areas. But in general, I tend to be mostly okay. Georgios is saying, do I have any plans for the channel regarding 2024? Yes and no. One of the things which you'll know, which I've spoken about a few times, is that I really need to be cutting down my workload. And I've been saying this for years, and every year comes and goes, and I still seem to be just as busy as previous years. I live constantly with a feeling of being overwhelmed, stressed, nervous, having to work evenings and weekends in order to get everything done. And yet, I've cut out the rulebook work. You know, I gave up almost 40% of my work when I retired from rulebook writing and editing. And yet, I still seem to be as busy as I was before. Next year is an interesting year because I am almost fully booked for how to play videos for 2024. So it's not really a plan for the channel. It's not really a change for the channel. It's more of a change for me in that I'm going into next year having videos planned for Inventions from Vital Lacerda. These are how to play videos. So not the playthrough videos, but the how to play videos, which take me a very, very long time to create. The Voidfall video was 95 hours of work spread out over 6 weeks. So I don't just knock these videos out in like a couple of days. It was 6 weeks of work because I only spend 2 to 2.5 days a week working on those. And I spend the rest of the time doing the playthrough videos and other things. So I've got Inventions from Vital Lacerda and Eagle Griffin Games. I've got Terminus from Inside Up Games. I have the next two games in the Stefan Feltitti collection to cover. I have potentially more videos for Aeon Trespass Odyssey. Potentially 5 more videos for Aeon Trespass Odyssey. I have Perseverance Episodes 3 and 4 How to Play Videos. These are already booked into my calendar for 2024. So I am at the point where I am, and I've already said no to a couple of people. A couple of publishers have contacted me recently and said, we would like you to do a how to play video for our game. And I said, yeah, I'm sorry, but, you know, and they said, one of them said, it was quite funny, actually. One of them said, oh, we'd like it before Essen. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Can you wait till Essen 24, maybe? It's weird knowing that I'm already mostly fully booked for those types of videos in 2024. It's a good problem to have, but I still need to be cutting down the workload more. Any plans for Christmas game-wise? I haven't thought that far ahead, unfortunately. I'd like to, and as usual, each Christmas, I will probably do something, although I didn't last year because, was it the Frosthaven video that caused me problems or something? Or the vlogs, or there was something else last year that I ended up not doing the fun thing that I like to do each Christmas because I had too much work on. This year, we'll see. If you are one of my Patreon supporters and you have something in mind of something that you might want me to do over Christmas, let me know. I'm all up for any ideas. Mark is asking, when is the next Games Month scheduled? When will you schedule it? I don't understand the question. When is the next Games Month scheduled? I don't know, Mark. If you're still in the chat, let me know what you mean by that question. Next question from Kabuki Kid. What is the volume of the Caspian Sea? I don't know. I mean, I can Google it. It's a good question, but I don't know the answer to that. What is the volume of the Caspian Sea? Is this like the, what is the average speed of a swallow? Next question from Flipside R. Are you excited to try out Pirates of Maracaibo? Yes. So I am very excited to try out Pirates of Maracaibo. It will be the first game that I cover on the channel when I get back from Essen. They were unfortunately unable to get me a copy before Essen. Not that I would have had time to cover it, but I might have done. But I will be covering it on the Wednesday after I get back from Essen. So I can tell you now exactly what date that's going to be. It's going to be the 11th. So set your calendars, set your reminders. Wednesday, the 11th of October, I will be covering Pirates of Maracaibo on the channel. And I think I'm going to like it. You know, I'm a big fan of Alexander Pfister. I like Maracaibo as a game. In fact, I love Maracaibo as a game. I don't just like it. So I am really excited to try that one out. Whether I'll be doing it solo or whether I will invite somebody round for the evening, I don't yet know. I need to speak to the publisher to find out. I think they said they were happy with a solo game, but I might see if I can do a multiplayer game and see who's free that night. Okay, so Mark is saying a month off playing games. No chance. I'd love to, but that is not going to happen. It's not going to happen this year, and it's not going to happen in 2024. Maybe December 2024. Maybe if next year goes well. We'll see. But no, I currently do not have plans to take a month off like I did in, when was it? January 23 or January 22? Gosh, seems so long ago now. Right, next question. From Graham, do I have a secret stockpile of Lorcana in the shops near you? I don't know. If I do, I'm not aware of it because I have literally zero interest in that game at all. So, yeah, I don't know. There may be a secret stockpile of Lorcana in the shops near me. James is saying, how often do I think about the Roman Empire? It's a good question tonight. I don't think that I think about the Roman Empire at all. Is there some hidden meaning behind these questions that are coming in that I don't know about? Next question from Monica. Was there a time when you felt that you went from being a hobby gamer to becoming a hardcore board gamer? She says she recently experienced it as part of the solo playing journey. For me, being somebody who once I get into something, I really get into something. It was the late 90s. So in the mid 90s, I was playing Magic the Gathering seriously. I was playing it multiple times a week. I was taking part in the nationals. I was judging at Pro Tours. I was a level 3 judge. That was my main hobby, and I did it all of the time. I would occasionally play a game of like Settlers of Catan or Citadels or something like that. But Magic the Gathering was my main hobby. When I got out of Magic the Gathering and I transitioned into board games, it didn't take long for me to know that that was now my new hobby. And suddenly, there was never a period where, oh, I'll just dabble a bit with board games and then I'll get more and more seriously into it. It was when giving up Magic and going into board games, that was it. I was into board games absolutely seriously as a hardcore gamer. So that's 26 years now. But I was a board gamer before that. You know, I've been playing Advanced Civilization, Acquire, and 1830 since you know, the late 80s, early 90s. But yeah, seriously, in the sort of late 90s, it was about 98 to 99, I think it was. So this is a question from Lunabet. How do you think you became board gamer channel with the most patrons? I don't have the most patrons. There are definitely other channels out there with more patrons than me. But what surprises me is the number of patrons that I have compared to the number of views that I get on the videos. This is something which will forever confuse me. And in case I come across badly when trying to verbalize what I'm thinking here, I'm not complaining about this, and I am extremely thankful and extremely grateful for every single one of my patron supporters, because they make my life possible. Today, I did no paid work today, right? But I have been busy since 7:30 this morning. So since 7:30 this morning, when I couldn't sleep, I got up, I started preparing for the Q&A, I did the draw for last month, I started preparing that, I started creating some thumbnails for some other videos, I did some other stuff. I sent some emails. I had some discussions. I finished writing the top 10. I went to the doctors to have my jab. I got back from the doctors. I set the studio up. I filmed the top 10. I then finished that. And now I'm doing the live Q&A. I have done more than a day's work today, but I've not been paid for any of it. And that doesn't worry me in the slightest. Whereas 7 years ago or 8 years ago, I'd be sitting here panicking, thinking I've not done any paid work. I've not earned any money. The financial support that the Patreon offers me is the flexibility to not only have days like today, where, as I say, I've worked on creating content and things like this, but not been paid anything. But it also means that I can do all of these extra bonus live streams, all of these, you know, the Friday nights where we're not doing a sponsored stream, or the Wednesday nights where we're not doing a sponsored stream. And I'm spending hours and hours of my time when I could be working creating videos for things that are not sponsored. So it's great, you know, and I'm super happy. And if you are one of my Patreon supporters, a massive thank you to you. But what, as I say, what doesn't make sense is when I look at the number of Patreon supporters that I have compared to the number of views that I have when I compare myself to other content creators. So there are other content creators out there who do a similar thing to what I do, who don't just get a few more views, they don't just get double the views, they literally get 5 times the views. So for example, on a normal playthrough video that I will do, it might get 2,000 views, 2,500 views. That's the average views that my videos get, even for popular games. There are other channels out there doing exactly the same thing as me, for the same games as me, who are getting 10,000 views per video. So that's 4 times the number of views. But they only have half of the Patreon supporters that I have. It makes no sense. I don't understand it. I'd love to understand it, because surely those two things should go together, but they don't. And even on these videos, you know, if... Anyway, yeah, I'm going around in circles. But anyway, so what have I done to have the Patreon supporters that I have? I don't know. I really don't know. I can't answer that question. I am me. I am a genuine person. I don't wear a fake smile. I say things what I believe in. I think I'm a down-to-earth person, and I'm very honest about my life and the good points and the bad points about it. But as I say, I still don't know how the Patreon support has been as successful as it has. But yeah, a massive thank you to all of you Patreon supporters that do support me. I went off at a slight tangent there. But I genuinely feel this, and I genuinely think this when I'm at home. It gives me this warm and fuzzy feeling, knowing that there are people happy to contribute to me being able to do what I do. That's fantastic. Anyway, Karen says, about reducing the workload, do you discuss with other content creators who might be able to give you some advice or share ideas? Yeah, I have in the past spoken to other content creators. So, for example, Nithranya, or Branislav, who runs the channel Nithranya, Board Games in a Nutshell, he does amazing tutorial videos. And he takes about 10 hours to create a video that would take me about 30. Now, the way that he films the videos is a very, very different style. And I have looked at that and I have thought, I could theoretically do what he does, and I would be creating videos in 10 hours instead of 30 hours. But ultimately, we all have our own process. This isn't as simple as, oh, just do it that way and it'd be twice as quick. I've been doing this now for a very long time. I have a process. I have a workflow. I know that my process is not the quickest, but I also know that that is the only process which I would be comfortable with. For example, going back to Branislav's, and again, his videos are fantastic, but what he does is he has 3 or 4 cameras all set up, all pointing to different parts of the board. He then has the camera on him as well. And what he then does is he presses record on all of the cameras, and he basically teaches you the game pointing to various bits, recording it on all of the cameras at the same time, and then he edits it all together, and that's the video. I know that I could not do that. For me, when I'm doing a tutorial video, I need to have it precise, I need to have it scripted. Now, that's not to say that his videos are bad, because his videos, I think, are fantastic and really, really well done. But if I tried to do that, there would be lots of erms, there would be lots of pauses. It would be a mess. It just wouldn't be anywhere near as good as the videos that I do create. So I'm happy that they take me, well, I'm not happy that they take me a long time to do, but I'm comfortable with the process that I have for creating them. JB is asking, what about Voidfall that grabs you? I saw that it was in my top five. Yeah, so Voidfall is currently my game of the year for 2023. I'm not going to say that it is absolutely definitely my game of the year for 2023, because 2023 is not over yet, and there might be a new game that comes out at Essen which beats it. Might be, I don't know. But what is it about the game which grabs me? Well, first of all, it's playable solo, it's playable cooperatively, it's playable competitively. All of those modes work. All of those modes work very well. The rulebook is very, very good. The artwork and the graphic design is out of this world. It's Ian O'Toole has surpassed even his best efforts before. It is just unbelievable. The production quality of the game, Mindclash have done a fantastic job with the game itself. And in terms of the game itself, it's just the right level of the agonizing decisions. There's so much depth to the game. There's so many decisions and there's so much planning and everything else. So yeah, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of things about it that just make it such a great game. Love the game. And it's not actually that long. You know, when you once you've played the game a couple of times, you're probably looking at 3 hours, 3.5 hours maybe, which isn't long for a massive epic space game like that. Mark is asking, can you explain why you love Voidfall but find Trakirian disturbing? I don't find Trakirian disturbing. I have tried playing Trakirian 5 or 6 times and it just doesn't sit with me. Every time I play it, I do terribly and I sit there while I watch other people get things ready, combo things, do this, do that, and I'm sat there struggling. It's just a game which clearly doesn't fit and sit well with me. Nothing wrong with the game. I think the game is a very good game. It's an excellent game. People love it and it's very good. There's nothing wrong with the game apart from the weird rule about the theatre on the days of the week. It's just something which I just can't seem to play it well or get my head around it. Right, we are on to the last question and then it is time for pulled pork nachos, which is what we're having tonight. And possibly the final episode of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Maybe. We got to watch it. So the final question is, DD has said, I've tried to create my own game and found that I am absolutely rubbish. Any recommendations on what to study / where to look when you're interested more on the data side of things? So here's a little bit of a story about me. I've been a wannabe designer for probably almost 40 years. So I remember, if you go way, way, way back when, to the mid 80s, there was it's when I started playing D&D. So I started playing D&D in 83. I was 13 years old. And around the mid 80s, there was a cartoon on TV, which was the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. And it was aimed at kids. And I started creating my own role-playing game based on the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon, which is a little bit of a cyclical thing. But anyway, that's when I started. Since then, I've had ideas for board games for the last 30, 35 years. And I've even worked on some, and one of them I have designed and it's been finished and everything else. I'm rubbish at it as well. And I've had to accept that not everybody in life can be a board game designer. We all have our own strengths and weaknesses, and designing a game is not one of mine. And I learned that about myself. I had to come to the realization that I'm a good game developer, but I'm not a good game designer. So I've worked with lots and lots of, you know, big famous designers over the years. Vlada Shevatel, Vital Lacerda, David Turtsey, Stefan Feld, lots and lots of these designers. And I've had the opportunity to work directly with them on helping them develop their games. And I know that I'm not cut out for that. But anyway, if you want to do it, there are places where you can look. I believe Jeff Engelstein has written a book on it. So that might be a good place to start. I can't even remember what it's called. Let me look it up. Jeff's a friend of mine. He's been one of my patron supporters for a long time. But I can't remember the name of his book. Jeff Engelstein, book on game design. And I think he wrote it with somebody else. Designing Games by Tynan Sylvester. Nope, it's not that. Rules of Play. Anybody know this? I've searched for Jeff Engelstein game design books. Oh, is it that one? That's the one. And the person who I thought he wrote it with, I was right. Isaac Shalev. So it's called The Building Blocks of Tabletop Game Design, an Encyclopedia of Mechanisms. It's £56 in paperback. Wow. I'm sure Jeff will send you a PDF of it for a fiver. Yeah, that seems quite expensive, to be honest. I didn't realise it was that expensive. But anyway, I've not read it, but I've heard that it's good. Apparently, Jeff wrote a few books. Game Tech is one of them. But yeah, have a search on the internet for Jeff Engelstein. He's a games designer. He's done a lot of good games over the years. And yeah, definitely recommend that. Right, before I disappear, just one final shout out for those people who missed the thing about an hour ago. Contest. Every month, as part of these live Q&As, I do a contest where you can win £50 worth of games vouchers from Gameslore. £25 of those vouchers come from Gameslore. £25 of those vouchers come from me. So thank you very much to Gameslore for supporting the channel with that. And you can win £50 of games vouchers. All you need to do is click on the link, which is in the chat and it's in the description of this video. Put in your name, put in your email address. Let me know if you are a patron supporter or not. And the secret word is coconut. And I will do the draw next month. Kabuki Kid said, Jeff is your neighbour. No, literally your neighbour, as in lives next door or lives in the next town. If he is your neighbour, pop round and say, Paul Grogan says hi. If he lives like 50 miles away in the next town, maybe not. But yeah. Right, we're all done. Just a quick thing about what's coming up on the channel Friday. Friday evening, there is going to be a live playthrough of Nucleum. Nucleum is my number one most anticipated game that is coming out at Essen this year. It was before I knew anything about it. I have now played it twice. It is utterly fantastic. And if it weren't for Voidfall, it might well be my number one game of the year. We will have to see. Anyway, very excited about it. It's coming out at Essen. I've got an advanced prototype and I will be doing a live playthrough of that on Friday. So if you are around on Friday evening, starting at 7:30 UK time, join me for that, or it will be available later if you're interested. Then we've got the 2022, the top 10 games of 2022, which is Sunday. And then next week, I've got two other new games that I'm going to be covering. I'm going to be covering the new version of Zhang Guo, which is on Wednesday night. That will be a live playthrough. And on Friday, I'm going to be covering the latest game from Hall Games, which is Jin. Which is from the same designer as Crown of Amara. So I'm very excited about that one. So yeah, lots of things to be excited about. Nucleum this Friday, Zhang Guo next Wednesday, Jin next Friday, and then I'm off to Essen. I will be off to Essen soon. So yeah, thank you very much to everybody for joining me tonight. Do I want to mention that your next month's Q&A? The next month's Q&A is different. Oh yeah. Next month's Q&A is different because Vicky's going on a jewellery course, which is going to be on Wednesdays. So we are moving next month's Q&A. You're not going to remember this, but I'll tell you anyway. Next month's Q&A will be Thursday, the 12th of October. So yeah, it won't be on a Wednesday next month. It will be on a Thursday. Because Vicky's at jewellery. And is it only that one? No, there's another one. The November one is on a Tuesday. Because it's before GridCon. Yeah. Okay. So the next 2 months, October and November, the Q&A will not be on a Wednesday. One will be on a Thursday. Next one will be on a Tuesday. Just to keep you on your toes. Right. Everything's done. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you again to all of my Patreon supporters for funding the channel. And if you like the content that I create and you want to support me on Patreon, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingrules. If you are a Patreon supporter, you get access to the Slack channel, all sorts of other background videos, behind the scenes videos and everything else, and 24 hours access to me, where I will answer any rules question for any game whatsoever, maybe. Right, take care everybody. See you next time. Bye-byes.